Welcome to Sent 315. We're here to encourage and equip Christians to engage in the adventure of sharing Jesus with those that God puts into their life. And we're so glad you're here. Taylor Rabil is here. And now you know a little bit about him.
I do.
And that introduction that I gave you of Taylor, that's just...
Yeah, I can't wait to share him with everybody else.
There we go. How are you, my friend? I know you're a little under the weather.
I'm doing well overall, other than slight cold, so excuse my voice, but yeah, doing well.
Well, I am really looking forward to our conversation for a variety of reasons. One of them is I've heard you on podcasts. So in my research, that's one of the things Brianna said on one of the shows, like I do this deep dive research, not really quite that
You
deep.
Just listen to podcasts.
Yeah, I do that. And you're an articulate, thoughtful, intelligent guy. And sometimes that's troubling.
Sure.
Yeah. Yep. Like me, I'm just light and breezy. You know, I don't want to get heavy. I just like skip through life.
I'm
going to
get you a t-shirt that says light and breezy.
There we go. That girl broke up with me in high school using that phrase.
That's
I think
amazing.
It was a Carole King song. You were light and breezy and I knew just what to do. Now we're so unhappy and she breaks up.
Oh my gosh.
So that's Carole King.
Too funny.
So Taylor listened to our episode with those unyielding guys.
Okay.
And that was a really interesting conversation for us. Number one, we typically don't go Rogan long in our podcast. And Matt and I are just really good looking. That's one of the reasons why we don't do the YouTube thing.
Yeah, we don't want to break everything.
We don't want women stumbling and things like that. Mike, it's safe. People could look at Mike all day and they won't stumble. But you called me up. And you and I, over the years, have intersected here and there. I've always loved and respected you and missed
Likewise.
You. Thank you. And you said, hey, I listened and I'd like to have coffee. I'd like to talk to you. And we did, and we had coffee. And I followed you a little bit. I don't think I followed you on social media, but just heard.
I'm so not active on social
You're not,
media.
Okay,
either.
So there
no
I couldn't if I wanted
to,
to. But this is an adventurer. When I think about Taylor, and I don't know if you're still adventurous, I don't know. But yeah, I think you made my son Jeremy jealous by your sailing prowess. Have you ever gone sailing?
Sailing was the thing that just caught me, like, my goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, that was in my, as I call them, my wandering nomad years all through my 20s.
Yeah.
I was taking people backpacking, sailing trips, all that. So,
so
obviously
cool.
It looks a little different now with three kids, a wife, a house, and a business to run, so... Adventures are a little bit more tame than they were in those old days, but still have an adventurous spirit.
Yeah, right on. And how long have you been married and how old are the kids? Because I don't think I've met your wife. I might
have. So we're almost 13 years and the kids are turning 7, 9, and 11 soon.
Okay, man, oh man, it's been way too long. We
know.
Can't let it go that long.
I agree.
All right, good. Here, you heard it. This is forever because it's
got
a podcast.
It down.
In our conversation, one of the things that we started talking about, and I don't even know if we used the word deconstruction, but we talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting to me, and something came alive in me because this is Sent 315, and it's about talking to people about our faith and the hope that's within us and doing it with gentleness and respect. And that's always been your character.
Thanks.
But I think there are people who are listening right now who have a person in their life, or they themselves really are wrestling with core beliefs, important beliefs that they just inherited.
Sure.
But they never really wrestled with it to go, hey, do I buy into this?
Well, mm-hmm. I think that for a long time, we wrestled with those things, yet we didn't need to quantify them. We could just accept it and move on. But today, everything's demanding an answer.
Yeah.
Not only that, we're exposed to so much more information now.
I
think that is a huge catalyst.
That's
where the majority of your influences before social media would have been your pastor and maybe a couple other pastors that you listened to online.
Yeah.
Even that was pretty new when I was in college. Like,
for sure.
Able to listen to other pastors.
Yeah.
But now you've got the entire world of academia at your fingertips with podcasts and YouTube. And
you can literally take a class at any school you want on any subject you want online.
And you can real time, while you're sitting there in church on a Sunday, check what the pastor's saying.
Yep.
Like, I don't know. Is that what it means?
Do you guys actually do it? Because I do that on occasion. It's good, but
it's so distracting.
Yeah, really. These phones, they can be.
We need to check them at the door.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. The thing is, too, with Charlie Kirk's death, churches are seeing people. I don't know if all of them are, but we and the people I talk to are seeing people flood in who either are de-churched or never, ever. I mean, I've had these conversations.
Oh, it's church after church after church.
We went up hundreds of people.
Yeah.
I mean, there was somebody that was crying at the connections booth that I was standing at and said that she really looked up to Charlie Kirk and she lives in Claremont and she heard that we had him speak at our church. And so she came and she goes, but I don't know what I'm doing. And she just started crying.
Wow.
So it was something really deep for her. Amazing. And I said, hey, welcome. Let's talk. If in this climate, we aren't certain about what we believe or what we question, or then what are we going to do? How are we going to be ready to give an answer for the hope that's within us if we don't? And I think that many Christians are guilty of not saying, okay, let me make sure. And one of the guys that had a huge impact on my life, and you're a big reader and researcher and everything, Taylor, Francis Chan has challenged me in so many positive ways, uncomfortably positive ways. I've spent years in the red letters.
Yeah.
You know, John 14 on, it's been important to me. What did Jesus say? And I've had people ask me that. And that's cool. That is a great place to start.
Heck yeah.
What did Jesus say? Who did he say he was? And how did he act? And what was his character and all that? So you've had a journey.
Gosh, I don't even know where to start with that. My initial thoughts are, I've learned through this whole journey, defining your terms is pretty essential, pretty critical. And so deconstruction means different things to different people, depending on where you're at and where you've come from. It can mean everything from a person who's just walked away from God and just wants to go, quote, live in sin, do whatever they want, or where I would put myself, someone on the other end of the spectrum, who by taking the Bible seriously, but having real questions and wrestling with that, my faith has changed over the years. The best analogy I heard years ago, and I may be misattributing this quote, but I think it was N.T. Wright who said something to this effect, but that words are like suitcases that contain ideas. Our Christian faith can be like that, where you grow up with a whole bunch of things being put in your suitcase of God, and you didn't necessarily choose what things went in there. You've just, at a certain point, inherited, these are all things that go in my concept of God. And then as you get older in life and you start having things that challenge that or question that or experiences in life, for some people, it might be abuse in the church. That wasn't my situation. For others, it might just be reading a difficult passage of scripture and being like, whoa, what's this in there for? This is kind of weird. So at a certain point, you start going, does this piece belong in this suitcase or should I take this one out? And then you start picking up another one. You're like, I don't know. Does this one belong in the God suitcase? Or is this one a human thing? Or is this an American thing or a Western culture thing? And then you start taking things out. And next thing you know, you're like, shoot, I'm just going to dump the whole thing out on the table and start over and see what goes back in.
Dude.
And that, to me, is a better way of understanding what deconstruction is. It can be destruction, but I don't think the two are synonymous.
No, hopefully. And you're right. You can put it under whatever term you want. But when it's really serious, genuine, authentic, you see that in the Bible. When Nicodemus is asking Jesus questions, they're legit questions.
Right.
It's not like his other brothers. I can't remember if he was a Pharisee or a Sadducee, but I remember then people asked Jesus a lot of questions that were just
trying to trick him.
Sure.
But those genuine questions are really important to answer. One of the things that we share, to some degree, we both enjoy having conversations with people who think differently than we do about things that are important to us, right?
Yep.
That's a big part of how I'm built. One pastor said a few years ago, if you're in an echo chamber and you're just talking to people who all nod their head and agree with every single thing you say, you should check that.
Yep.
You should think about that for a second and see. And he challenged me to have a conversation with somebody who thinks differently. So I did it the easy way. I picked somebody that I absolutely love. I picked my niece. And she does think differently. I know she does. She laughed at me once when I was in Illinois with her. It was a misunderstanding, but she kind of like got me a little wrong. I just had never met a Muslim person with an Illinois accent, because I'm from here. And so she's dressed in her burqa at the airport, and she says something to us, and she was obviously a woman of the Muslim faith. And I tell my niece, Jody, hi, Jody, she didn't sound Muslim. And she goes, well, I was like, you sound like an ignorant fool. And
so
she didn't say it that way. She's very loving. So I said, why don't we do this? And I encourage other people to do this too. Let's trade some books.
Yep.
So she gave me a book that we would read through and discuss, and then I was going to give her a book. So she gave me White Fragility.
Oh, geez.
Now, you got to understand, she lived in Ferguson.
Wow.
I was there just after the death of George Floyd. He was in Ferguson, right. Because there's been, unfortunately, too many of those. And so I get in the introduction, and this is a long answer to your definition of terms. I see cisgender. Now, what the heck is cisgender? I've never heard of that. So I got to look it up, and it's easy to look things up. I look it up. Okay, that's the gender you were born with. Well, what other genders are there for real, dude? Come on. Wait a minute. And the use of terms kind of defines the argument and the conversation. Well, he who controls the vocabulary, you're stepping into something. So it really started an interesting discussion.
That's good. This is uncomfortable for people who love certainty, but words do change meaning over time.
Mm-hmm, true.
Like Jesus, for example. We all have different ideas throughout Christianity of what that Jesus is. You can have the far right Jesus who would be carrying a weapon and defending his borders, or you have the quote social justice Jesus who would be letting everybody in. It's like, which one is the true Jesus? And the reality is it's complicated. There's aspects of both that, and we don't need to get into detail that one, but I've just realized over the years, it doesn't do any good to be so dogmatic with my own views that I'm not willing to hear what other people have to say.
Yeah.
A question that's haunted me and that really was a catalyst for my quote deconstruction was, how would I know if I was wrong? How do I know that the beliefs that I hold are true? And how would I know if I was wrong? If you can't falsify your beliefs, are you holding them accurately? Mm. For me, that began a journey of picking one question. I would go, okay, what do other Christian traditions think about this? Or how has this been understood throughout history? Was this understood in its culture in the time? And so even among Christendom, you realize, wow, there's some diversity of thought on this particular theological topic. And that gave me a little bit more humility to not hold so tightly to the views that I held before. Yeah. But it can be very disorienting. And I think that's where, for a lot of people, it does just unravel your faith. You go, shoot, I don't know what to believe anymore. And then a lot of people just give up and just move on. For me, I couldn't do that. I can't take the easy way. I have to go dig deep and be like, well, I'm going to read 5 books on this, and I'm going to talk to tons of people and listen to all these podcasts. I'm going to figure out the answer. And the irony is, the longer I have been on this road, the less certain I am about a lot of things, and the more okay with that I am.
There you go.
Isn't that interesting?
I got to the okay part with it, quicker. Yeah, I get it. I've been in business a long time, and for a long season, the business of church. So I was the executive pastor. So you get these contracts, and it's severability is one of the things. It's in just about every contract. And what it means is, in my language, it means, okay, if this is flawed, if this 1.11b gets thrown out of court, it doesn't wreck the entire agreement we have. You can take them a piece at a time, like line item vetoes, that concept. There are things in my faith, for sure, that I don't get. Mm-hmm. And they didn't blow up all of my faith.
Yep.
Because so many things that I had experienced, or so many things that I had found to be true, I'd found to be reliable in my own life and lives of others as well, and people that I had read, held me together. But there's things I'm on a staff of about 15 pastors, and I know I don't agree with all the pastors on all the stuff.
Well, that's, in my opinion, a good thing.
It should be.
Everybody agrees, that's more like a cult.
Which some people have said.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Just to give something that's helped me for those who are listening that might be in a similar situation. There's a pastor, Greg Boyd, who I had this frame that I found helpful. A lot of people have a house of cards idea of their Christian faith or whatever your belief system is, where everything is perfectly balanced and intricate, and you've got this great systematic theology. But if you pull one card, the whole thing collapses. So if one thing turns out not to be true, or if you're just not certain of it, the whole thing falls apart. That is a very dangerous way to live.
Yeah.
What I liked, what Greg was talking about, is there's a concentric circles model where there are core doctrines, Jesus, center of that circle. Then the Christian faith, whatever creeds, for example, might be shared among multiple denominations and Catholics and East Orthodox. Like, there's going to be some overlap in that center circle. And then you get another ring out, and now you might have some differences of theology when it comes to the thousands of denominations that exist.
Yeah.
And so you keep going out on those rings, and it's just helpful to realize, okay, is this issue I'm wrestling with a center core thing, or is this on the outer fringes of that. And if it's on the outer fringes, hold it loosely. It's not that big of a deal. Yes, it affects how you live, and your beliefs certainly affect who you become and how you live. But at the end of the day, are you focusing on that core center, or are you allowing those outer ring issues to be in the wrong spot?
Absolutely right. Core to that as well is Christians need to love each other.
Absolutely.
And they need to be an example of that love, because it's so critical to the salvation of those who are watching. I mean, and right, we get this rep of, okay, we know what Christians are like. They're haters and they're bigots, and it's what we would all know what they're against. But when you listen to someone who does not have a relationship with Jesus, and you listen to them, like Mike Slater, who was on the show, he's got this tiny little book on having conversations with people. Mm. Yeah, I don't know if you know Mike, but he's a nationally syndicated dude on the radio.
And oh, okay, him. Yes, I am familiar.
He was local, and now he's out of state, and I miss him. But he said, listen, they've got their trunk, they've got their baggage, and if you don't let them take their stuff out, they got no room for your idea.
Right.
That's
your idea
so good.
Can't go in because it's full.
Right.
If we're not listening to each other, nobody wants what we got. Come on.
No, that's spot on. And I feel like one of the hardest parts of this journey for me has been people just automatically putting you in a box of, oh, yeah, you've fallen away. You must be wanting to go live in sin, or you must have unconfessed sin in your life, or whatever the thing is. It's like, no, it's reading the Bible and taking this seriously that brought me down this road. Yeah. What really helped me was to understand the principle of charity in argumentation. It's the idea that if you're going to try to wrestle with someone's belief or debate, or even just have a conversation with somebody where you disagree, it's super important to not only understand their view, but to argue against the best version of their view.
Right. Don't take the worst one.
This is why I hate debates. Debates is all about winning. And Charlie Kirk was a great debater, and he had some great things to say. He was very skilled at that. But I don't know how many people's minds were changed who are on that far left spectrum that he was speaking against. So his approach was great for people who already agreed with him and gave people confidence. But I don't know that that approach is how you change people's minds. You have to be able to meet people where they're at and speak in a way, argue with the best version of their argument, even if they don't articulate it well. Right. And that's what the principle of charity is even if a person isn't good at expressing their view, you don't just attack the worst version or the straw man.
Right, yeah.
You say, okay, is this what you mean? And if you can say it back to them in a way that they go, yes, that's what I mean, now you're actually having a conversation.
Hmm. Yeah,
that's
but
great.
But that is just so often lost in these bitter divides.
Sure.
Just in our culture right now. Like you can't get that in a meme. You can't get that in a 5-second Instagram reel or whatever. That's why I'm not on social media. I got so frustrated with that just antagonistic straw man version of arguments. It makes you feel good and you can double down on your views, but it doesn't lead to changing people's hearts and minds.
Agreed.
No, it's the truth. And you know, you get further when people know. They don't care how much you know until they know how much
you
care.
Yep.
I say that right?
Yeah, you got it.
So I get that, and I think that's really important. And all of these styles of communication, some people are just servants and they're not theologians, and it's powerfully effective. But there's some problems when you don't want to ruin the relationship because you don't want to confront somebody. But I can tell you, you can be more confrontive or direct, if you want to say it, if people know the tone of your heart and know who you are.
Yep. That's
great.
And I've had a lot of relationships like that. And that was part of the conversation with Unyielding. Mm-hmm. What happens with people that are very debate oriented, and dude, I have trophies this high in debate, state champion stuff.
Well done.
Okay. Yeah. They're in a box somewhere that I don't know. And I never, ever, this is my experience, I never debated anybody into the kingdom of God.
Right.
I understand the principles. I understand how to win debates. But there's landmines in every style like that.
Mm-hmm.
Intellectual or confrontive, like Peter. Hey, y'all, you murdered the Messiah. About the most confrontational thing somebody could tell you, right?
Sure.
And 3 or 5 or how many thousand people came to the Lord through it. So they all have some point, but they also have some landmines.
Right.
Yeah.
I want a little bit of your path.
Sure.
What's important to me is the people that are listening, who have people in their life who aren't where they used to be,
yeah,
or don't have the full suitcase that they used to have, but are genuine people with genuine questions. How does the church, how do Christians, how do the people that are listening right now keep that connection through that journey?
That's such
and
a
not
good question.
Just boot them out and say, oh yeah,
I'll tell you what doesn't help is just doubling down on certainty and giving people pat answers. Because I can't tell you how often that would be the response of like, well, you just have to have faith, or you just have to read your Bible more or pray more. And to be honest, just getting an answer isn't the problem that needs to be solved. It's deeper than that. And so I've, for me, found relationship and conversation is far more important. And having the space to have dialogue is critical. You can't do that on a Sunday morning. There is no Q&A session. For a person like me who is overly analytical, I will own that. Like, I analyze till I paralyze, I've been told. I walk away from a Sunday sermon or an hour reading the Bible with more questions than I started with. And I need a place to process that and to unpack it. And so, unfortunately, the only place I could find for the early years of my wrestling was podcasts or YouTube. And that's a very lonely way to go. And you just end up down these rabbit holes, just like, you know, any other ideology that's just reinforced by algorithms. And so you need people in your life who can have good faith conversations that aren't afraid of those questions. Honestly, I've not seen that modeled in any church. I have yet to find that. The only way I found that was through pursuing friendships, like what I did with you. It's like, hey, we don't probably agree on everything. I'd love to sit down and chat with you.
Yeah,
I met with pastors face to face and had conversations, and with friends and with family members. And there are very few people who not only enjoy those kind of conversations, and I understand that, but that are familiar enough with the topics to actually be able to even have a conversation about it.
Right.
For real.
So that makes it extra difficult for a person who's, if I've read 5 books and listened to 20 podcasts on this topic, and then somebody comes and gives me some simple answer, I'm like, you have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Do you know, do you think that they don't engage in that manner because they're afraid?
It could be.
They're afraid they don't have the answers, or secondly, they're afraid that they may start questioning.
Well,
they don't want to.
I mean, not everybody's that intelligent.
True, but you don't need any intelligence. I think it's allowing space for uncertainty. Intellectual humility is the word for it. It's saying it's okay to not have the answers. And I think we often, for good reasons, in the Christian faith, encouraged to have certainty or to have a reason for the hope that is in you, like you just said at the beginning. But I think we mistake that reason for, I need factual answers. I need a bulletproof argument. The reason is because we're loved, and because, like, it's the relational aspect. Like, that's, how many people do you know who became Christians because they had a good argument that changed their mind? That's really not the reason for the hope.
Some, but not 1,000. When I listened to Middleburg, he kind of went, wait a minute, I'm smart at researching these things out and finding the truth and everything. In the same way with McDowell. But they're the ones.
Yeah.
In my life, there's not a ton of them.
Right.
And we need that.
It does require time and space for conversation. It's been a long road for me. My whole, quote, deconstruction started when I did a year of discipleship training school at All People's Church, where I was a decade ago. And it was an intentional year to study the Bible and pursue God and to go deeper in your faith. And so just reading through the Bible in a year, which I'd read it before plenty of times, but just to be focused on it intentionally like this, I came away with that with far more questions than I came into it with, because we just breezed through stuff. I was like, whoa, 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 can we go back to this whole Canaanite conquest thing? I've got questions. Like, whoa, 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 what's with all the wives? There's so many things that reading through the Bible, you're like, can we pause here for a minute? I got some questions. And I didn't, they're just, it wasn't the format or space for that. And it's no fault of theirs. That just wasn't the focus of the training school. And so I started with pulling that thread of like, well, how would I know what's true? Or how do I know what this means? And so I just started unraveling from there. Just like, well, if this is, if, oh my gosh, there are thousands of denominations that all believe different about this particular book. Wow, that's okay. Who's right? Okay, what about this? And so, long story short, I probably for the first 5 years just unraveled to the point where I was very cynical, frustrated, bitter. I had no one to share that journey with, and I would sit there on a Sunday morning and be like, I don't agree with half of this, and I don't think you know what you're talking about.
Did you stay in church during
that? All of it. I never left.
Okay. I didn't know that. How did your wife handle that, and what was the impact that it has had on your kids?
Oh, it certainly was tough for her, for our marriage in general. I don't mean this negatively at all. She doesn't need to ask those questions.
Yeah.
I honestly envy that simple faith, that ability to just trust and know and be fine with your experience with God. That's just not me. So for her, at the beginning, when I was asking these questions, it was terrifying. She's like, are you becoming an atheist? Do you even believe in God anymore? How's this going to affect raising our kids? And those are real questions that have real consequences. We learned over the years to at least get to a point where she can trust that I'm pursuing God and I'm committed to following Jesus. And I think those anchors have given her the ability to let me have those conversations with other friends. And that's just not an area of our life that we share.
Yeah.
And it is hard. I wish that I could have deeper conversations like that. But I don't expect everyone to want to have these deep theological, philosophical conversations. But I didn't leave the church because I still saw that Jesus is worth following and that church, there's no replacement for it. The community that you have through church. And it's very isolating and lonely to feel like you're sitting there on a Sunday morning and you are the only one who's got questions.
Yeah.
And I know there's other people there, Absolutely. But there's just no way that I found to connect with those people in a healthy way. Because what you don't want to do is just sit there all together. Oh yeah, we all agree on how horrible this all is. Let's all just criticize the church. And I did that plenty. I just got to a point where I was like, I don't like who I'm becoming. Mm-hmm. And that was a turning point for me of realizing it's not as important that I have the right answers to the test as much as who I'm becoming. And I didn't like who I was becoming. The cynical, bitter, negative, frustrated, uncertain, it just wasn't a fun way to be or to live. And there wasn't a single catalyst, but it was kind of like the tide turned. I was like, you know what? I'm going to focus more on practice and who I'm becoming. Like at the end of the day, I want to live well and love well. And that's where I started leaning into more like Dallas Willard and practice-based people. We talked about Richard Foster, Celebration Discipline.
John Mark Comer.
Not that there isn't theology involved with those, but it's far more practice-focused of like, okay, but who are you becoming? What are the practices that are shaping you?
Yeah.
I still have those questions and I still have a lot of uncertainty. But I don't know, I guess I'm just able to hold it a little more loosely.